Hi, my name is Jenny Justice Neumeyer, and you are listening to Life Behind the Scene Adulting Tuesday Talks, where our resident millennial, Rosie Martinez, and I discuss topics to help young adults maneuver career and life. We are currently walking through the book, The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene, and discussing how those laws are applicable in 2020 and tips on how to apply them to your life. So welcome. And thank you for listening today. Let's get this party started. First of all, let me start off. I'm Jenny.
Hi, I'm Rosie.
And today we have our guest host again, Scott Neumeyer. Thank you for joining.
Glad to be here. Ready for the next rule. Or law, excuse me.
Yes, law, as you have so many times told me, these are not rules, these are laws. So we're gonna go ahead and deep dive into law number two. Never put too much trust in friends. Learn how to use enemies. Be wary of friends. They will betray you more quickly, for they are easily aroused to envy. They also become spoiled and tyrannical. But hire a former enemy, and he will be more loyal than a friend because he has more to prove. In fact, you have more to fear from friends than from enemies. If you have no enemies, find a way to make them. Rosie, what's your thought right off the bat?
I think this is an interesting law. Because I think a lot of the times, if you look at the law and you look at just experiences, and I think maybe this is something that I'm sure by the time that you're in college or school or in the workplace, you experienced something, some kind of issue with either friends, whether it was a disagreement or anything like that. And it kind of always goes back to, oh, I trusted this person too much.
Yes.
And, you know, it's never something with, you know, an enemy, because an enemy is kind of just in the background. You know that they're there. You don't like them. They don't like you. And it's kind of just a mutual thing that's there. So hearing him, you know, hearing this law, especially where it says, you know, if you don't have enemies, then find a way to make them. So how does that, you know, how is something that you leverage? How is that something that's good? Because we've been told that, I mean, enemies is bad or things like that. So how does that work in our favor?
Yeah, it's I think you're right 100% that, you know, all you ever hear are the stories of how this friend betrayed me, this bad advice, you know, right. On and on. And I think a couple things. One, first we have to realize that in our lifetime, we're only going to have very few real friends. Sometimes we take the term friend, but it's somebody that we know enough to say hi to. It's an acquaintance. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a more familiar acquaintance than, you know, like, say, all the 30 people in your class. But, but five of them you could say friends, but you studied together, you did. But sometimes it's that feeling that makes us vulnerable, right? Mm. But also, I mean, but if we feel like we can trust them because we just knew them a little bit, we didn't know them enough, you know?
Right.
So I think that that's what gets us in trouble with friends a lot of times, because they really weren't the friend that we thought they were.
Well, and the book says the problem is that you often do not know your friends as well as you imagine. And he goes on to talk about how in a friendship, you're not necessarily going to fight on things. You're going to find that agreeable common ground, and that's where your friendship lies, that agreeable common ground.
Yes.
Whereas when you get married, you have to move past that agreeable common ground, and there's plenty of fighting opportunities.
Yes.
Because friendship tends to stay in that lane. So you have a friend that y'all have fun playing baseball, your friendship is going to be based on having fun playing baseball. Like, it's not going to usually move out of that lane is what he was saying. So then when we, like you said, pull them in another area of our life, then that's when this conflict happens. You think you know them, but you only know them as a happy friend playing baseball. You have no idea what the work ethic is, for example.
Well, and I think, you know, the part of the envy comes in when it comes to friends. Because, you know, jealousy and envy comes from people that you know. You're usually not real jealous or envious of people that you don't know, that you're not in contact with. So, you know, yeah, everybody wants to see their friends do well, but it gets to a point like, well, how come I'm not doing well? Or what could I do, you know? And I'll never forget, my mom told me a story when she was a kid that this lady down the street from her wanted her, she had a young daughter, mm-hmm. and she wanted my mom to walk the kid home after school every day, and she would pay her a nickel. It was a long time ago, and a nickel was a lot. And so she would do it. Well, all of a sudden, my mom's friends were like, what are you doing? You know, you're taking Betsy walking. Well, I'm doing this for her mom, blah, blah, blah. You know, she'd give me a nickel. Well, her friends would quit walking. My mom's friends would quit walking with her. So it was just her and Betsy. So she said, after a while, she said, well, I got tired of that. So I went and told Betsy's mom I wasn't going to do it anymore. And guess what? Who do you think was walking Betsy home but her best friend? So, you know, I mean, that's what happens. You know, and that's reality so many times. So I think that the biggest mistake sometimes we get into is that's not my friends. That's not who I'm around. And we find out when we do that that no, we just, you know. And it's not that we can't trust our friends. We just have to be realistic about our friends, I think.
And another point he kind of goes into is, this is more along the lines of, like, if you were to hire a friend or you extend yourself and you're like, my friend is good at this, and you kind of nominate them to do some activity. He said, people want to feel they deserve their good fortune. The receipt of a favor can become oppressive. It means you have been chosen because you are a friend, not necessarily because you're deserving. There is almost a touch of condescension. Tell that. Is it? Am I pronouncing that right?
Condescendence?
Condescension.
Condescension.
In the act of hiring friends that secretly afflicts them. The injury will come out slowly. And a little more honesty, flashes of resentment and envy here and there. And before you know it, the friendship fades. The more favors and gifts you supply to revive the friendship, the less gratitude you receive. Which I thought was pretty eye-opening.
It is. I've always said that it may be who you know that got you there, but it's what you know that keeps you there. And I don't think a lot of friends see it that way.
Right.
Because they figure if that's what got them there, then they're good. But it's not. It's still what you know. And so, you know, when you come from, you know, the friendship side, you don't think you have to know as much to maintain. Mm-hmm. Where it talks about converting an enemy, they can't believe they're there in the first place. So, right. You know,
like, wait, so what?
They have something What's to happening? Prove. Yes. And I think finding enemies, that's another interesting twist, you know. So I would guess if I was going to say I needed to find some enemies, what would be the best way?
Right.
Well, you know, then maybe, you know, I love the saying that the enemy of my enemies is my friend. So, you know, if you find people that you have common enemies with, maybe you're, but would bring them in, then right. Maybe that's one way of finding
making
them.
Your enemies.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting. So it's a different twist, but I think it's a tougher law than a lot of the others, because we do have a personal relationship. We have it's almost a commitment that we have with this person.
Right. And I mean, usually whenever you have a friend, you connect with them because you connect to a personal level, whether it's you have a similar upbringing or you have things in common and you meet in college or you're studying, you know, the same thing or going into the same career field. So making friends is kind of, in a way, quote unquote, it could be natural to some people. Of course, it's not natural to everybody. But you can't go out saying, hey, who wants to be my enemy? You know, it's not right. Something that you hear people saying. So this law is just kind of, you know, it is a little tougher than than the first one that we just that we talked about in our last podcast. So yeah, I think this is a tough one in a different way. Well, I guess we could say.
And he says further in this law that all working situations require a kind of distance between people. And I think that this is where we can probably cross that line. And to further keep you laser. So it seems like these laws of power, you need to be intentional in everything that you do. You need to be conscientious how everything impacts everything. And when you get all comfy, cozy, warm with somebody, and you're like, oh my gosh, they're my friend, then that's how they can do more distress,
harm
to you than good, yes. And he goes on to say, you are trying to work, not make friends. Friendliness, real or fake, only obscures that fact. The key to power, then, is the ability to judge who is best able to further your interest in all situations. Keep friends for friendship, but work with skilled and competent. And I think that's where, especially as you move up and get into management and get into leadership roles, that may be impactful because you want to help somebody out. You want to help, you know, and you want to get them, but are they the most skilled and competent?
Right. Well, no, I think that's a lot. As a matter of fact, a lot of people now in hiring, you know, a lot of reasons why they actually have firms and other ways of hiring is because they found out that people hire people that they like, and the people that they like are people that are like themselves, right? So the problem is that you hire people to do jobs that you don't want to do. Right. So you're expecting a person that's just like you to want to do a job that you don't want to do, right? So we hire friends, and when we think that, oh, that's going to be great, but they're not any different than us, you know, so it creates that problem too. Mm-hmm. And when they're your friends, usually, although there may be an alpha in a group of friends, right, that kind of controls, but they control but at the wish of the others, not just because. And when you become in a relationship where that friend, they're working for you, or even you're working for them, and how do you, you know, that it makes it difficult when it finally comes down to somebody has to tell somebody what to do.
Right.
You know, and so that can really change everything quickly.
And he mentions that without enemies around us, we grow lazy. And in his examples, he talks about how there people have been able to achieve more because the enemies were working against them, and how that was appreciated. And it's kind of funny because how, like, in sports, it's like the underdog that has to overcome more is the one that makes the big headlines and they get the big contracts. And that's kind of like the storyline for it. You know, it's kind of like a running joke. If you weren't raised in a single parent family, you know, you're not going to be like a big football player or something.
Right.
He also mentioned never let the presence of enemies upset or distress you. You're far better off with a declared opponent or two than not knowing where your real enemies lie. So I feel like enemies are not necessarily always people, but maybe it's attitudes also. Maybe it's some decisions that we have to work against to know, hey, it's like somebody who comes from an alcoholic family who knows, hey, alcoholism runs in my family. I have to actively work against that thing all the time.
Right.
And then a lot of his examples come from Days of War and Lords and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So the enemies were pretty clear cut when, right. hey, that army is trying to take our land. In today's technology world, it can be a little less clear cut.
Mm, absolutely. That's why now, you know, they do competitive research, right? To find out who your competition is. People have old businesses they don't even realize. And so a lot of times we don't know who our enemy is. So it's important to know our enemies. And enemies do make us better. You know, it's just like it's competition makes us better.
Right.
You know, I don't know you know, I found out not too long ago what this whole catfish thing was and where it came from. But, you know, it was evidently when they started shipping, they would catch all of these fish and they would put them in the boat and then they would take them and they would transport them across the ocean. And a lot of times you get there, most of them were dead. And for some reason, somebody said the catfish was their enemy. They would eat. They dropped one catfish in there. And when they got there, they were all still alive because it kept them jumping.
Oh, my gosh. So that's where the term comes from.
Catfishing, yeah. So that's the term. Oh, no. So that's a baby boomer giving those new terms. But you know, that's the hot tea for today.
He's throwing out all his, like, you obviously didn't learn. Oh no, we're gonna have to read ahead about throwing all your stuff out.
Yes, but yeah, so bringing your enemies in has a good advantage, much better than friends. That's right.
Right, and you know the way that I kind of see this law, I always like to compare it and see it more of like in real life. How do you apply this? How I see it is, well, with friends, you're comfortable, you know, you kind of do the same things over and over again because that's what's fun for both people or just a group of people. And with enemies, you know, a lot of the time is there's this kind of, you know, a difference. There's a difference between there, whether it's somebody's hating on the other person or there's just things that you don't like. So it's an obstacle that you have to find a way to overcome.
Yeah.
Or just do better and say, okay, well, why is this person saying that? Like, is this a way for me to, you know, look at it from a different perspective? Is this a way for me to find a way to overcome this or really truly focus on this, you know, thing or obstacle that they're pointing out at me to become a better person? Mm-hmm. So I guess in a way your friends, sure, they are your friends and it should be, you know, it's a friendship, but they're not helping you. So an enemy is kind of pushing you to whether it's find a way to do better or find a way to, you know, just overcome whatever the obstacle is. So it's kind of interesting. And one of the things that I want to point out is something that Jenny said earlier, and it's that an enemy truly doesn't have to be a physical person, or you don't have to find a physical person to be your enemy. And I think today in society, it can go back to mental health. I mean, it's something that is so big today. And it is an enemy. I mean, it's something that you have to fight and you overcome. And I mean, sometimes it's a battle for some people that you have to fight every single day. So you don't have to have a physical person there saying, oh, that is my enemy. You know, it could be your thoughts in your head, whether it's depression, whether it's, you know, schizophrenia, whatever it is, that's your enemy. And I think an enemy looks different for every single person, not just a physical person there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if you look at friends as your comfort zone, right? So we stay in our comfort zone, but there's no growth in our comfort zone.
Right.
So getting out of our comfort zone into that enemy territory is where the biggest growth is.
Right.
And I think with practical application, we won't be 100% honest with our friends. The people that we care the most about are the ones that we won't be direct with. But we have no problem being direct with our enemies.
Right.
We have no problem showing them their shortcomings and everything else.
Right.
But it helps them get better. And if they're working for us, then it helps us get better.
Right.
So you know, it's good sense, but it's not what we would think normally.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
I totally agree. It's a lot to know. I see that delicate balance. Like, it seems to me with this law, he's showing you that there's a balance. He's like, keep the friends, but learn how to work and use your enemies for your advantage, and you may not be able to use your friendship to your advantage and be conscientious of that.
Right.
Yes.
And to try to, you know, some of these laws, I mean, we really need to have a positive look to them. And if you take this positive and say, all right, how do I, because it's like, well, you know, I've got to be leery of my friends. I've got to, you know, all that.
Everybody's out to get me.
but again, if we're not helping our friends grow, then are we really a friend?
Right.
If we're not being honest with our friends, or we can't trust our friends, then is it really anything, right? And if we're helping others that normally we wouldn't care about, that we, and yeah, it is helping us, but it's only helping us by helping them. If we're not making them do things better, if we're not helping them grow, then it wouldn't help us. So, I mean, ultimately, a lot of these laws help everybody involved. It's just that somebody has to understand them to make sure that they follow through.
Right.
And that's the one that's striving for the power.
That's true. And it does say nothing is stable. Every law, I love how this book is structured because it kind of goes through the transgression of the law. He starts off with the law, then goes through the transgression of the law, the observance of the law. He gives his interpretations. Then he goes through the keys to the power, and then through a reversal, which is kind of like your, what's the word when you're exceptions to the rules is, and in that part for this law, he says nothing is stable in the realm of power, and even the closest of friends can be transformed into the worst of enemies. So I think that to me was the biggest takeaway for this is, you know, friends play a role. As you said, everybody has a role. Friends play a role. And enemies, whatever they may be, also play a role in this climb.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just all you gotta do is look around today, just in politics, and see who were best friends yesterday and who are bitter enemies today. And that's not just, it's always been, but...
Or in Hollywood, or in marriages,
or right. However. So I said, it is a law. It is. We see it over and over again. We don't have to like it, but we do have to understand it.
Did you have any more takeaways for this one? Any questions from a millennial perspective?
No, I don't think so. I think now I understand kind of where the law is coming from. And like Scott said earlier, you know, we have to find a way to see the positive side from the laws, because they can sound a little negative and we might not be as comfortable with them as we would want to. But there is a logic to each of the laws. And so for this one, I think I do understand where that's coming from. And I mean, it's true. I think a lot of the times that with friendships, you know, your friends are your friends. So they're making sure that you feel good about everything and you're taken care of. So whether it's, you know, you make a joke and maybe it's not funny to everybody else, but your friends are going to laugh about it. So a friendship, you know, essentially is probably not based in honesty. So you, from there, you can kind of see, well, they're not being honest with me, so how are they helping me grow? Whether, you know, versus an enemy, they're going to tell you, oh, well, that joke wasn't funny. I mean, why are your friends laughing about it? And so it's like, well, you know, and it will make you uncomfortable and probably mad or upset. But in a way, you know, you're going to go back and think about it and say, well, maybe my joke wasn't actually funny. So you go back and kind of analyze things. And it's something that you can apply in the workplace, your relationships, friendships, and everything else in life. So I actually kind of like this law in a way. I think it's an interesting way to
see it.
We need
a bell to ring.
We do need a bell.
Rosie liked the law. So we're two laws in. And This actually kind of started from a conversation between me and Scott, and just like how to be. And I talked about how my family, growing up in a Hispanic family household, never saw anything like this. Never heard of anything like this. No one ever mentored me in my younger days about how to handle certain situations. And kind of wanted to put it out to both of y'all, how so far, just what we talked about in the last two laws, where in your background do you feel, Scott, I guess, where you learned how to be like this? Do you even feel like you have a touch point? And Rosie, if you have anybody in your background that, have you ever, in your family, do you feel like there's anybody that understands these two?
Yeah,
know who wants to go first.
Well, for me, I don't think this was ever something that was ever talked about or even touched upon as I was growing up. I think until now, maybe I could relate with the second law. And I think that's something that one of my mentors has kind of, in a way, he didn't tell me exactly what the law was or anything, but he's always been the type of person that's very blunt. So whatever I do, whatever I say, you know, he'll kind of analyze everything and give me feedback on it. So he's not gonna, you know, fluff it up and say, wow, you did such a great job if I didn't do a great job. So he'll tell me, you know, you did good, but these are the ways that you can do better. So, of course, you can't compare it exactly with the law because it's not your enemy or a friend, but it's that feedback that you get back. They're being honest with you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the way that I can kind of relate to this law as far as just my upbringing. But definitely not when I was little or my parents raised me, I didn't hear anything about this. So now it's actually interesting to see it all. You know, just all of the laws that we have that we did not know about.
That's going on.
That's going on, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me. You know, we grew up that we had to respect adults. We had to respect our elders. We had to respect people in authority. We had to respect our bosses. And a lot of the first law is exactly about that. It's respecting them. And it's making sure that that respect is seen. And so you grew up with that daily. You know, I can even remember my parents, I mean, even when they were in their 40s, saying Mr. So-and-so to somebody that was 30 or 20 even, because, you know, that was just their respect, and that's what they grew up with. I mean, you know, they'd have probably gotten beat, you know, not beat, spanked, whatever, if they hadn't when they were younger. You know, so that law is pretty easy. The other law is kind of a twist, but yet different than when I took a job. If you quit your job after 2 years, then an employer, when you started to look at another job, would consider you unstable. Now, it's that your experience is getting wider. You know, you're getting more. So when I would, if I would come home and say, hey, Mom, you know, such and such, well, you got to learn to get along. You know, I mean, it was not about me. It was not about me at all. It was about getting along, making sure, because especially in my parents' generation, you expected to have maybe one or two jobs your entire life. Yeah. You were going to have a good job, you were going to have a good retirement, and that's what you did. So you had to learn to get along with your enemies. You had to learn to get along with those and make something out of it. Mm-hmm. So the friend part, you know, the only way we were told about a friend was that, you know, you wanted to be around people that were going to be good for you, you know? So it really doesn't have a lot. So I think that's the part that I don't know that anybody's ever taught, you know, not to trust your friends. We always are taught to have good friends.
Right.
And to be a good friend.
So maybe that's one that leaves us more open than the others.
Right.
Just even from every generation.
Right.
Because we always want to think that's my best friend and they'll be my best friend forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they are until they aren't.
There's no such thing.
Yes.
Thanks, Mom.
Yes. That's right. I would be curious how that would be in a culture like growing up in Russia or growing up in some, you know, where everything was questioned. You know how they would feel about friends.
Right.
So, if you're from Russia,
there you
can
go.
You please go into our LinkedIn group discussion and let us know. How do you feel like this law impacted you or if you felt like this law impacted your upbringing and your family and your culture.
Yeah. But read the book.
Yeah.
Read the book. I think that's important.
It is very important.
Get the book.
And I think that's it for today. That's it for law number two. Another great discussion. I just feel like I've been eating like all this meat. Like it's just this heavy, like, whoa.
It gets better every time you go through it.
Yes. So thank you for joining us today.
Bye.
Bye.
Like we said, these are laws and they are happening every day in our lives, whether we like them or not. So we're two laws in, and based on these two, were you aware of these things growing up or have you learned about this before? we're not only saying if you're from Russia, but anywhere. Is this part of your culture and your family's language? Let us know. Join our LinkedIn group for Adulting Tuesday Talks. The link is included. And keep this conversation going. Thanks for listening. This is Jenny, signing off until next week.